This is the BBC Home Service for mothers and children at home.
Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin.
The rather formal sound of children's programmes until Ed Stewart came along and livened things up.
Hello, darling.
Stewpot was one of the great character creations in British broadcasting history. He spoke to young people. He did not condescend to them. He used a decency and an empathy so rarely found in broadcasting.
You know, he soon made it his own. He had a very friendly style of presentation. He talked to the microphone as if it were a real person, and he was very informal. He was a good communicator. It was a winning formula, you know, and one Ed made his own for 12 very successful years.
He loved that sort of music. You know, at any opportunity, Nanny the Elephant and Sparky and the Talking Trains was his bag. I think that's what he'll be remembered for more than anything else, possibly.
Yes, hello. This is Annika Rice, and it's all quite emotional telling the story of one of British Radio's great talents. We lost Ed at the beginning of January after a sudden illness, and it's only when I started looking back at the life of someone who'd been on the radio for 50 years that I realised how much his programmes had touched me. I grew up with Junior Choice and Cracker Jack, and when I finally met Ed, he was everything he should have been. He matched exactly what I'd heard on the radio, and he certainly touched many millions of other listeners' lives. Ed was simply a great, natural and warm broadcaster with a wonderful sense of fun.
Baby, I'm still in love with you.
There goes Little Milton. Oh, what a good record that is, too. That's what love will make you do. So, Johnny Walker coming out for just a few seconds. I'll see you tomorrow at 11 o'clock, of course, on the radio. And if you're watching Top of the Pops tonight, at about 7:25, all right? Good. And now on to the Cedric Walker Show.
Bye!
You'd like to carry on for half an hour. Just been invited for a pint, Ed.
For a pint? You mean it takes you half an hour to drink a pint?
Certainly.
I can get 10 free ones in that time.
Go get them then.
All right.
Ta-da.
Just for fun. Music.
As he often said himself, he walked the tightrope of show business his entire career, sometimes falling off. But his humour and love of life never left him. From radio shows to television to panto and endless charity events, Stewpot was a one-off with broadcasting in his veins.
There's my personal favourite of Matt Monroe's, which we weren't able to play last or the week before last. Jill Butler says, crying into my wine, Ed, you've been a friend every Sunday, whilst I get the evening roast on the go. A confession to make, some 30-plus years ago, you were enjoying a curry in the Byfleet Curry House. Oh, yeah, and I got home. I asked you to autograph a serviette for my two young cousins. Never did give it to them. The youngest is 40 next week. Enjoy your retirement. Retirement. I wish. Ian Jones says, I won one of your radios in August of 1968. That was the Elvis Presley special. Do you remember? It doesn't work anymore. Do you keep the guarantee? Yes, but you wouldn't believe it. It's run out.
He had a great gift for communication and talking to people of all ages, not talking at them. So, hop on board and we'll take the journey together. The theme tune we all associate with Ed, Morning Town Ride from Junior Choice. It was the programme that almost bookended his career from 1968 to Christmas 2015.
And here we go again. How are you? And happy Christmas. Have you undone all the prezzies yet? Or are you going to wait till the start of this programme? Because I haven't got any in my studio. This is the Ken Bruce studio, and so there's nothing left. He doesn't leave anything. He's here 364 days a year. He doesn't leave me anything. Anyway, not to worry. No more about Ken. I've got to say hello to so many of you who sent in requests. So here's one from Baz the Poet. He says, hi there, Stewpot. Very happy Christmas. You kindly used to mention my poetry way back when you had the afternoon programme on Radio 2. Here's a goodwill message to you and one and all. It's great to hear your lived-in voice a-bouncing off the walls, a-listening to the good old records like this one from Michael Jackson.
we are, the Yetis and Costa del Dorset. 13.5 minutes before 9 o'clock is the time. Morning. It's Sunday, Sunday the 5th of June, and today, please, will you wish Simon Harris many happy returns. He's 8 years old. He shares his birthday with his Bampy. And love to both from Mummy and Daddy, Jonathan, Nanny May and Nanny Joe, and this card coming from The Grove, Newport Pagnell and Buckinghamshire. Is it Morris or Harris? Morris, that's it. It looked like Harris for a moment. And Simon, many happy returns to you. OK, you're sharing this next record now with our first tape request from the Lancasters.
Hi, Ed.
Hello.
I'm Elizabeth Lancaster, aged 12.
And I'm James Lancaster, aged 8.
Please could you play The Old Rugged Cross for our daddy, as it is his birthday on June the 6th. Thank you, Ed. Bye.
Bye. But we'll come back to Junior Choice later. To begin the story, we need to go back to a wartime baby born Edward Stuart Mannering in Lympston, Devon, in 1941. Years later, anyone who had lunch with him would recall two things. One, that he rarely paid, and we'll come back to that later as well. And two, that he ate at such speed. His answer was, wartime baby, eat it when you can. In those days, he ate to live, but in later years, he said he lived to eat. Gloria Honeyford remembers food always being a priority during her time with Ed at Radio 2.
In my case, I can never eat or drink apart from water when I'm broadcasting, even to this day. But when I would look through the glass, Ed would be sitting with a huge steak and on a load of chips and mushy peas and a glass of whatever he had. And somehow or other, he was able to munch his way through that enormous lunch and chew that steak and yet open the microphone at the appropriate time, broadcast to the nation, shut the microphone again and yet back to the steak and chips. And I used to think, how can he do that? So he clearly was very relaxed and, of course, very fond of his food.
Back to our story. And after the war, and with a couple of brothers and a sister, his family moved round, ending up in Wimbledon, where Ed's first exposure to the radio enabled him to hear the applause from the SW19 courts over the garden fence and then on the Valve radio set. Perhaps it was an early combination of his two passions, broadcasting and sport. Dick Barton and the Devil's Gallop was Ed's first musical experience, vivid memories for many of his generation. As he followed the adventures of the special agent, he remembered being huddled round the radio for Children's Hour and the velvet-voiced David Davis. And there was plenty of music on the Mannering gramophone. Fats Waller, Hutch, Fred Astaire, Glenn Miller, all stars of the 1940s and all favourites of his mother. And this one from Henry Blair and Ray Turner, which was to reappear many times in Ed's career.
Sparky, oh Sparky.
Who's that? Who's calling me?
It is I, your piano.
My piano? But you're talking.
Yes, I can talk, and I can play myself.
And the light program provided plenty of entertainment and laughter. Workers' Playtime, Take It From Here, and Jack Benny. Now, Jack Benny was famous for acting the part of being tight-fisted and cheap, and the humour struck a chord as young Ed revelled in the idea of stinginess as a comedy thread. Benny's line that it cost him a fortune being mean became a twinkling anthem for Ed and part of his later radio persona.
The Jack Benny Program.
I don't care how he put it, I still think it's a good script.
Well, now don't misunderstand me, Jack. There are some good things in it. But unfortunately, the whole script is based on your being cheap.
But, Ralph, people expect me to do cheap things.
I know, and that's fine for radio. Now, look, here you have a show starting with two strangers knocking on the door of your big Beverly Hills mansion to ask directions. And you invite them in for lunch and then charge them for that. Then you show them around the grounds, and when the man accidentally falls in the pool, you charge him a quarter for swimming. And to top it off, when he starts to sneeze, you insist on giving him penicillin at $5 a shot. Now, really, Jack, nobody could be that cheap.
People were never quite sure if Ed was serious or having a laugh, but it became a trademark, a as Johnny Walker remembers.
I've got more memories of Ed back in the pirate days. And all the pirate stations seem to be based for some reason around Curzon Street in London's Mayfair. Another little mews off of Curzon Street would lead to the Red Lion Pub, which just became the Pirates Pub in the 1960s, and that's where I'd often see Ed. And, of course, he's famous for being tight, and he used to play up to it, you know. You'd never see Ed Stewart's wallet, or if you did, there'd be lots of moths flying out of it. And he played up to that. He kind of thought it was a great joke.
And a regular prize in a Radio 2 competition at one point was an Ed Stewart wallet on a chain just like his. It was certainly a great example of the self-deprecating Ed. His producer at Radio 2 had a credit card slip framed and hung on his wall from the time when Ed did actually buy lunch. And Ed was quite proud of it and happily showed it to visitors. David Hamilton.
But I have to say, that was a joke that we did about Ed Stewart. He wasn't really like that. Ed was actually a lovely guy. And he said to me, he said, I'm a person whose glass is always half full. Usually it's been filled by somebody else.
Tony Brandon was on board the pirate ships with Ed before they both joined the BBC. They stayed lifelong friends, and Tony, Keith Skews and Dave Cash all remember some classic Ed moments.
Doing a show that used to finish around about 12:30, I think, on Radio 2, and the tech op said to me, there's a call for you from Ed Stewart. He's in reception. He wants to take you to lunch. He said, he's there and he's got a taxi waiting, so as soon as you come off air... Right, so that was it. Taxi outside. In we got, and we went to a little restaurant, which is just round the corner from Broadcasting House. And then, to my amazement, Ed paid for the taxi, and we went into the restaurant. And we had the best in the house, and that was it. And at the end of the meal, when the bill came, he pushed it over to me and said, yours, I believe, Uncle Tone? I said, well, hang on a minute, Ed. You're supposed to be taking me to lunch. Well, he said, I have taken you to lunch. He said, I paid for the taxi. You don't expect me to pay for the meal as well.
There was a standing joke amongst many colleagues who remarked that he would never pay for a round of drinks. You know, if there were six people there, five people would buy a round of drinks, and then we'd say, come on, Ed. And on one occasion, he pulled out a £5 note, and his colleagues apparently stood back in amazement, and one shouted out, when he pulled out the fiver, the Queen blinked. But later in life, Ed did buy drinks and joked about his wallet, and he said, I just never remember where I'd left the key.
He was very generous as a friend in everything but money. We used to call him Deep Pocket Stewpot. As guys who were off at the same time would be drinking, and they'd sort of say, Ed, it's your round. Hello, Ed, it's your round.
But we're getting slightly ahead of ourselves. Happy days were passed at schools in Oxford, filled with sports and music, and it was at school that Ed discovered two important things, that he was short-sighted and that he could make people laugh. But sport got the better of his education, and his four O-levels were a disappointment. However, the orchestra needed a double bass player, and Ed was tall enough. By now, it was the mid-50s and skiffle was bursting out. The double bass merged nicely with Ed's new favourite, Lonnie Donegan. No T-chest required.
Now, this year's a story about a racehorse called Stewbo. Now, Stewbo was born down in California. When I was down there the other day, the jockeys was telling me they don't think he's an ordinary horse at all. In fact, they all say blue day in a storm. So my tip is just bet on Stewbo. And you might win, 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 bet on Stewbo. And you might win, yes, bet on Stewbo. And you might win, 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 bet on Stewbo. And you might win.
Stewbo, top of Stewpot's Pops in 1956. On leaving school, an interview was arranged with the BBC as an assistant studio manager. But Ed didn't know his killer cycles from his bicycles and was advised to get some experience elsewhere. On the spur of the moment, he and his double bass boarded a BOAC Skycoach and set off for Kai Tak Airport in Hong Kong on a one-way ticket paid for by his dad. The trendy Mr. Mannering with thick black spectacles, just like Eric Morecambe's, was joining a band and planned a tour in the colony. It was 1961.
I'm a travelling man, made a lot of stops all over the world. And in every port I own the heart of at least one lovely girl.
Curiously, I started my radio career right there in Hong Kong 17 years later. Anyway, the bookings for his new band fell through, and after some temporary work at the airport, it was Radio Hong Kong that offered Ed some work as a film reviewer and sports commentator, Ed having embellished his non-existent BBC experience. But it was short-lived, as apparently they found his voice too up and down. But then another English language station, Rediffusion's Blue Channel, nothing to do with Everton, offered him a job, and they played jazz. Even read the news on TV for them, but another move soon followed to a station called the Commercial Channel. Ed was becoming more adept at both changing jobs and broadcasting. His 3 months had turned into 3 years, and a completely novice broadcaster had become an announcer, newsreader, and now disc jockey. As 1965 beckoned, so did home, and after scrounging a ticket from Lufthansa in exchange for 6 in-flight radio programs, Ed was back home with his black glasses and now a black bushy beard, and he was looking for work.
Help! I need somebody! Help! Not just any... Please help me!
After a brief stint at the Central Office of Information, along with Don Davis, who later fronted Radio 2's Beat the Record, the showbiz career was going nowhere. But a chance encounter with Ray Williams, Elton John's first manager, sent him knocking on the doors of the pirate radio stations, which had set up studios on ships and forts around the Thames Estuary and Essex coast. Broadcasting outside territorial waters, they could please themselves and excitingly could play adverts and pop music all day. It turned out Radio Caroline didn't want anyone, even Ed, but Radio London, a very slickly run American-funded operation, was indeed looking for a new jock. Dateline, 2nd of July, 1965.
Beard and glasses, tall and skinny. Ed Stewart eats like a horse.
He was on board within 24 hours with a salary of £25 a week, along with Tonys Brandon and Blackburn and Dave Cash.
As a pirate presenter, Ed Stewart was very loose, he was very easy, and he communicated with the listeners exceedingly well, because we didn't have any phones or anything like that, right? And we had definitely didn't have any emails and things like that in those days. So it used to be snail mail, and we used to get it 2 weeks after it was written and posted on land, because it had to go to the London office and then go up to Harwich and then come out on the ship.
The Galaxy was a converted American minesweeper. Saw wartime service. But you opened little lockers and there were pictures of Betty Grable on the doors and film stars of the day. And it was a wonderful atmosphere. And we used to do 2 weeks on and 1 week off. And we always all met up on our week off. The camaraderie on board that ship was quite unique.
I met Ed for the first time in 1966 aboard the pirate ship Big L Radio London. Well, he was a couple of years older than the rest of us, which made quite a difference at that time, because I was 22, I think he was, and he was about 24, and he was a little bit, in his own words, prefectish and old school. Strangely enough, we were all into the Beatles and the Stones and Motown and things like that. Ed loved the Bachelors, and at any opportunity, he'd play a Bachelors record. So he was slightly different in his taste and always slightly older in his outlook than the rest of us, I think.
All for one and one for all. So Ed's new life was out at sea, off Walton-on-the-Naze, on the motor vessel Galaxy, which would be home for the next 2 years, along with a ship full of like-minded pirates and Captain Beninga's Dutch crew. It was a truly international mix, and ironically, not a Londoner amongst them. His duties included newsreading and spinning the top 40 discs.
Thank you, Lulu. Row out here any time, love. The only lady we have out here is an LP of Lady and the Tramp. Hello, hello. I can't make it as deep as he does. Well, the party's in progress already. The Tremolos join us on Big L this weekend. Here comes my baby. Oh, it's a lovely Saturday morning, just 5 and a half minutes before 12 midday. Looking out of the porthole, it's all lovely and sunny, and I can I could see a couple of bikinis floating about. Nobody in them, of course, just bikinis. Yes, sir, it's Ichiku Park. Ichiku Park, club disc of the week, the Small Faces.
It's all too beautiful.
Oh, isn't that marvellous? Club disc of the week from the Small Faces in Ichiku Park. Sitting here in Big L out in the Bryony at the moment, I'm dressed in my wonderful Big L T-shirts, which comes in large, medium and small. Big L emblazoned on the front, 266 on the back, and a 12 and 6 postal order. Just that will include pastage and poking.
And there was a certain amount of clowning around with Kenny Everett and Keith Skews.
He was an idiot. He laughed, he joked, and I thought, he can't be a radio presenter like this. But he was very relaxed, great fun. I would say he was charming, entertaining, very much a professional disc jockey, where he actually talked to the audience rather than talking at them. And he had a very bright and breezy presentation, which a lot of the DJs at that time didn't have that je ne sais quoi.
Hello there. Put the school spot on a dive, cos ten to five's when I arrive.
Then, my goodness, I'm alive.
It's school spot, school spot, school spot, school spot, most wonderful school spot. I love to listen to a monkey tune.
And when no Roman comes, I swing.
Better the chorus.
School spot, most wonderful school spot.
I love to listen to a monkey tune.
And when old Roman comes, I swoon.
Put the school spot on a five, just in time when I arrive.
Then, oh boy, am I alive.
School spot, school spot, school spot.
Ed with Kenny Everett, both one-time choir boys, promoting what was probably his first radio feature aimed at children.
I'm Noel Edmonds, and nobody would have heard of me if it hadn't been for Ed Stewart. Ed was working on Radio London, and in a place called Gidea Park in Essex was a 16, 17-year-old called Noel, who heard the pirate ships and thought, imagine how exciting it would be to be on radio. And I used to send lots and lots of tapes to the pirate ships, principally Radio London. And one day I heard Kenny Everett, my big hero, doing some of my gags, because I used to do sketches in the style of Jack Jackson. And subsequently, I found out that Ed Stewart had got this tape, and he had shown it to Kenny, and Kenny had played it. And in years to come, when I told Ed Stewart the story and told him of my profound gratitude, he played it down. And he said, well, if I was instrumental in starting your career, then I'm really grateful. But I know he was. I know that without Ed Stewart, I would have had a very, very different life, and I may not have had a career in broadcasting. My relief is that I told him many, many times.
And imagine Noel's amazement as they later met across the continuity studios at Radio 1 when he presented on Saturday morning after Ed's Junior Choice. Unit 4 Plus 2, one of the records Radio London championed, and there wasn't much concrete under Ed's feet at that point. Life could be harsh in the North Sea storms, though Ed had sea legs and would never want to waste his food. It was enormous fun with an enormous audience of millions. But when he'd joined, he'd been told to change his name, like his shipmates, in case they were identified by the police back at port. Mannering was cast adrift in favour of using his middle name. So it was Ed Stewart riding the waves and the turntables. But even that was about to change.
Well, he became Stewpot very quickly because we all had nicknames, ladies' names, as it were. I was Kathy Cash, and Everett was Edna Everett and all that sort of thing. And Stewpot wasn't really into that at all. The one thing he could do was he could do some crazy things with his stomach muscles. He could make them roll. But he lift up his shirt and he'd roll his stomach, and it was quite outrageous, really, but he could do it. So I said, my goodness, what a pot belly. And then all of a sudden Stewpot came up, and that kind of stuck.
I read the news today, oh boy.
The Pirates had the exclusive first airings of Sgt. Pepper, but as time rolled on to 1967, the government woke up to the demand for pop music and decided to deconstruct the BBC to provide a new service, and Radio London would close. Ed was there to help, and they selected A Day in the Life to be their very last close-down record. Ed presented that last hour, as by then many of the others had jumped ship.
Kenny Everett had gone by then, Tony Blackburn had gone, they'd all gone to do other things. So I was left to produce it with Paul Kay, the newsreader. And so we put this mix of music and voices. We had Dusty Springfield, we had Cliff Richard, we had everybody. Even Ringo Starr was there saying, and Dusty saying, I don't know what I'm going to do now without Radio London. And it was that sort of feeling which came through. And Kenny had left a note saying, if you do have a choice of a last record, please make it A Day in the Life. And John Peel agreed. So we decided, all of us, unanimously, that that would be our last record.
Well, what more can I say? It's time for me to say goodbye. When I think back to about 2.5 years ago when I arrived back in England from Hong Kong, a penniless bass player and a hick jock, and then Radio London gave me the chance to come into your homes, which has been the most wonderful thing in the last 2 years. It's given me the chance to meet Myrtle, get a name of Stewpot. In fact, it's given me a complete life for 2 whole years as I've been out here on the ship, and I wouldn't have missed it for the world. And now I want to say hi to somebody who's become such a huge name on Radio London, right around the country, Tom Jones.
I've been in love so many times, thought I knew the score. But now you've treated me sort of wrong, I can't take any more. And it looks like I'm never gonna fall in love again.
Tom Jones was a Radio London discovery and grateful for it. But Ed was looking for work yet again. By now he was clean-shaven and spruced up, a far more BBC image. He was contacted by a friend from Hong Kong who was working at the BBC, and Ed was delighted to be included in the launch team of the new Radio One. But not on Junior Choice, that fell to Leslie Crowther. Ed was offered Happening Sunday.
And this week on the show, the Johnny Howard Band and Singers, the Peddlers and Cat Stevens.
It was a programme which didn't happen for long, just 6 weeks in fact, and left only with an occasional appearance on Radio 1 and odd jobs, he was knocking on doors.
The story has it that after I'd finished my Happening Sunday, they gave me a programme called What's New, and I was doing an afternoon programme on Radio 1. It was only once a fortnight that I got in my rotating room, so I wasn't working that much. But I'd been sent some postcards from kids going out of school and saying, we always meet up on a Friday, could you play us a record because we take our trannies with us. So I did it, and Derek Chinnery was the head of Radio 1. His wife had her car radio on, heard me do it, got back home that night and said to her husband, I've just found the guy to take over, Ed Stewart, give the job to him. They auditioned me, and on February the 13th, there's a lucky 13th for you, 1968, I started on Junior Choice.
It was to be a 3-week contract for Saturday and Sunday mornings at £50 a week. And the first record he played was this rock and roll classic from Roger Whittaker.
Hey, one morning, just as the sun was rising, I heard a maiden singing in the valley below.
But the programme soon became a very crafty mix of pop and novelty records, and the 3 weeks were soon extended. Tony Blackburn.
I got The Breakfast Show, and Ed got Junior Choice, and which I thought was actually a good thing for him, because he loved that sort of music. And the strange thing about Junior Choice was that all the cards we got in, obviously, were for the granddads or the grandmas and the mums and dads of the kids, who would always select something that the kids didn't really want. So they'd all ask for Nelly the Elephant and the Spark in the Talking Trains, where the kids would really want to hear people like Bucks Fizz.
When I got the job with Junior Choice, there was a lady in charge. Her name was Anna Instone. And she said, what you've got here is like becoming a young schoolmaster. You're going to appeal to generations. Make it your own. So much so in your style that you love every record. You don't say, oh, not this again.
You know, because that makes a little child feel awful if you don't like that. And make it indelibly yours.
18 minutes past 9 o'clock is the time, and morning, and welcome to Junior Choice, if you just joined us. Mark Roberts, I hope, has been there all the programme, because we've written in, say, Mum and Dad, for Mark Roberts' birthday, which is today. Now, we live in West Germany, at RAF Bruggen, and by the way, he has a brother called Jamie, and Jamie's a demolition expert. He's just two. And Mike Reed, please, for his birthday. He'll be getting ready for his party this afternoon already. Cool. Thanks, say Mark's Mum and Dad. Well, it's not likely duck in actual fact. It's the King's new clothes, as Candy Arson has asked for. And wish her a happy birthday and say, hello, darling. With love from Mark and Jamie and Mum and Dad and Jeevy the dog. And please play the King's birthday on Saturday the 30th of August. I love the names for this record now. And who's this over there? All right, into line, please.
There was this king, see, who was very fond of wearing new clubber. Anyway, one day, while his nibs was in the garden playing marbles with a ferret, along come a couple of wide boys. What, king, said one of them, feast your mince pies and this magic suit of gear.
A year on and the show was booming, with 1,000 requests flooding in every week and upward of 16 million listeners. Ed was flitting around the country playing footy and making personal appearances, highly chuffed at how popular the programme and he had become.
Darling.
Well, I was playing football. I used to play football every Sunday, charity matches around the country. And this particular weekend, we were in Billericay. And I went to Billericay Hospital after. And they said it's quite a lively ward. And sure enough, it was a good boisterous one. And there was two kids who'd been there long term, and they were both going home that week. So I said, do you want to send a message to each other? But they got tongue-tied, these two long-term patients. So I said, anybody else want to say anything? And this kid came up. Hello, darling. And I kept that on that piece of tape for a couple of weeks. And there it was. And I thought, that is a classic. I'm going to keep that as a separate jingle. The same thing happened with another one. I was going to play at a club called Cross Keys in South Wales. And the organiser of it and his little boy, who was aged about eight again, eight or nine, and in the back of the coach, he said, can I sing you a little jingle, please, Dupont? And you can hear the revolutions of the coach changing gear. You can hear everything. We loved it. We kept that for that very reason as well.
Happy birthday to you. Squash tomatoes and stew. Bread and butter in a gutter. Happy birthday to you.
Years later, Ed tried several on-air appeals to try and track the Hello Darling lad down, but he was never found. The two jingles became part of the furniture of the show amongst the hits and visiting pop stars. The morning the Osmonds stopped by, Broadcasting House was besieged and Portland Place had to be shut to traffic. Young fans were seen trying to climb up the windows to get a glimpse. Ed's journalistic skills were also put to use when he was asked to launch Radio 1's Newsbeat programme, the BBC's response to local commercial radio's success with news coverage.
And on the Tea Time Newsbeat, we'll be meeting the young wife who's been named as Britain's champion booty maker. As the underwater experts report on what went wrong for Pisces 3, we ask, how safe is it for our divers? And if you think our prices are going up fast, listen to the problems of a country where everything has gone up five times in price this year.
But Junior Choice was his weekend joy, and royal requests were famously included with Alan Price's Don't Stop the Carnival for Princess Margaret's children. Then, by royal command, a story of everyday life, Car 67, for the Queen Mum's 80th birthday to go with her Sunday morning soap.
Car 67, Car 67, where are you? Come in 67, 67, can you hear me?
Control, this is 67 here, I can hear you loud and I can hear you clear, yeah. Control, this is 67 here, I can hear you loud and I can hear you clear.
And the classic novelty records still trickled out.
Oh, there's something funny around here. What is it? Oh, it's you. Come here and sit down. You're going to have the truth told about you and put on record. Here, please do not sit too close to me. I've just had my breakfast. Thank you. Who put salt in the sugar bowl? Who put fireworks in the coal? Who put a real-life toad in the hole? My brother.
Terry Scott was number two in Stewpot's all-time top 10 children's favourites, after Sparky. Sport was never far from Ed's attention, playing cricket for the Lord's Taverners, golfing tours, and he was often in a showbiz football 11 for charity or watching his beloved Everton. I should mention here that Ed was enormously generous with his time for charities. Time, notice, not necessarily his cash. But why Everton? Well, because when they were young, his older brother John had been given free match tickets by Chelsea centre-forward John Bentley. John supported Chelsea, so young Ed naturally took ownership of opponents Everton, who promptly lost 6-0. But Ed felt sorry for the vanquished and supported them ever since.
Oh, he's fit, oh, crazy, he's fit, oh, man. And a football, it has robbed him all the wee bit since he hadn't. It would tag a dozen skivvies, his place to wash and scrub, since the job became a member of that terrible football club.
Ed Stewart had a wonderful life. He had a life full of music and sport. He loved playing football. He was a pretty good goalkeeper, actually, in the showbiz football team. And he was a great Everton supporter. I could never understand why somebody from the south of England supported a football club from Liverpool. And I thought, all those expenses travelling up to the home games, that doesn't sound like Ed.
Teammate David Hamilton. And Ed's passion gave him the chance to present sports shows on radios 1 and 2. He'd tinkered with television in the late 60s and a dreadful ITV programme called Exit the Way Out Show, which lived up to its name. And of course he'd done a little bit in Hong Kong. So as a main player on Radio 1, he was soon on the radar for Top of the Pops and fronted the show during most of the 1970s.
Hello, darling, and a warm, warm welcome to Top of the Pops!
Hi, my name's Dave Bartram. I was the lead singer of Shawaddy Waddy. And obviously, I came into contact on a number of occasions with Ed Stewart, who I admired very, very much, a true professional, true gentleman. And my overriding memory of Ed Stewart's career in introducing Top of the Pops and saying, at number one this week, we have Leicester Boys' Shawaddy Waddy.
But then along came Crackerjack with music, games and silly sketches.
All I do know is Friday, it's 5 o'clock and it's Crackerjack!
Michael Aspel was moving on and he advised Ed to select a new hostess as his assistant had just featured in a top shelf magazine. The double or drop game with cabbages was the highlight, along with stunning prizes of Crackerjack pencils. Zoe Ball was completely hooked.
OK, it's the boys' turn, and this is another game which is much more
difficult than it looks. I guess Ed Stewart first came into my life through Crackerjack, which I absolutely loved. It's Friday, it's 5 to 5, it's Crackerjack. And I thought he was so dashing. He used to wear the most bonkers clothes, like sort of flares, like two-tone flares, and a lovely turtleneck jumper. And he was so calm and charming in an atmosphere that was kind of mayhem. I mean, I guess it was the precursor to Saturday morning telly. Quite anarchic when you look back at it. And of course, absolutely love the double or drop competition. We used to reenact that in the playground. Kind of think, actually, that's probably where it all started for me, wanting to be a television presenter. Was watching him on such a great, fun show.
Well done, Michael. And if you go that side there...
The show shifted its time slot a bit between 5 and 5 to 5, but Bernie Clifton always relished his company.
And he had a kind of a bumbling authority. He was able to swan through slightly above the chaos. He had this wonderful sonorous voice, great delivery, a great broadcaster, and he was able to swan through these sketches while we were sweating, and Ed would just wander in, get the punchline, and then wander out again. I always admired him for that.
And Ed's new assistant was Jan Hunt.
It was pretty tough. We used to go in on a Wednesday for the read-through, and then we had just those few days to get the lines under our belt. Because when you're actually acting and you're working with others, you have to deliver those cues. And Ed left us high and dry sometimes. So he and I developed a little code between us. But I used to make sure that I was absolutely dead letter perfect with Ed's lines. And it used to be a nudge in the back for him. If there was ever just a momentary pause, I thought, oh, it's forgotten. And so he used to call me the digger. because I used to dig him in the back when it was his cue. But he was like a big cuddly teddy bear that used to walk into rehearsals, never in a bad mood, always a happy, jolly soul, and great fun working with him.
But it came to an end in 1980, even though a shouted "Cracker Jack" from across the street followed him to the end of his life. Ed's junior choice had also run its course, and while Tony Blackburn took over the chair, Ed moved over to the senior network for his first proper stint on Radio 2.
Ed Stewart.
And although the new booking was five afternoons a week, it was to be another request show incorporating the remains of family favourites. After just 3 years in the new slot and 17 years on Auntie's books, it was off to commercial radio again and in newly opened Radio Mercury, with Ed presenting the mid-morning show, or rather not presenting it when he forgot to put himself on air for his first live programme. It had to record the very first programme as he was already booked away in Spain. Yes, playing golf.
It's 8 o'clock on Saturday, the 20th of October, 1984. This, for the very first time, is Radio Mercury. Good morning, and I'm Ed Stewart, welcoming you to the very first transmission of the 48th station in the independent local radio network, Radio Mercury, where we're broadcasting on 103.6 FM stereo and 197 metres medium wave, that's 1521 kilohertz. From now on, every day, music, news, entertainment and information.
The money wasn't so good, but Radio Mercury was a happy station and Ed stayed for 6 years. He was a regular panto player and the freefall buffoonery suited Ed's ability to improvise, although it often left the cast grasping for a script. Ed was an inspired booking for Buttons in Cinderella, which was his first panto in 1972, with Barbara Windsor.
I get a phone call from the lovely producers, and they said, "We're going to try something different, Bar. It's from the radio. He's never done any theatre, and it's Ed Stewpot, you know, sure." I said, "Oh, I know him." I said, "I think he's lovely and all the rest of it, you know." They said, "But he's never set foot on stage." Well, no, he couldn't set foot on stage. He really couldn't do anything. I pulled my hair out at times because he just didn't know how to walk on a stage. But the thing was, what we forgot was, it matters to the people who are performing with him because he's all over the place, but the public loved him. He treated it like a big game. But I really forgave him because he came on in the second act and sang, and he was wonderful. He had this amazing voice, like crooner-type voice. And we got on ever so well together. We giggled a lot. He had this wonderful smile and this giggle, and people loved him. People in the business liked him. People outside loved him.
But the call of national radio had never left him. And in 1991, with the management again evolving at Radio 2, he was ushered back in, first on Saturdays and then to a daily afternoon slot. And again, the listeners welcomed him warmly. He devised an exciting quiz called The Accumulator, with 40 seconds of really quick-fire questions which the audience got hooked on, and which grew and grew over the 6 years he did the show. He always loved quizzes and strongly believed in them as a radio format. As Radio 2 grew to become the nation's favourite station, Ed went with the flow and often said he was delighted with life. The one smudge on his horizon was the fact that he was about to lose his house after some financial arrangements came undone and he faced, although never reached, bankruptcy. It was while he was wrestling with banks and accountants that the programme was sent away, a long way away.
It's all for you, Radio 2.
And this is Ed Stewart wishing you all a very good afternoon from the middle of the South Atlantic, the Falkland Islands, part of Radio 2's help with the celebrations for the RAF 75th anniversary. And I'm in the furthest south, I think, 8,000 miles, and here I am at the brand new base. When I say brand new, it certainly wasn't here when I was last here 11 years ago, Mount Pleasant.
Well, you have to start from these days if you visit the Falklands. The old strip at Stanley is now only used for local light aircraft. This new 8,000-foot runway at Mount Pleasant is part of a complete new military town, with its own power, water, stores, maintenance and accommodation for all the service people, and it's where we're staying too at the moment, a nice little room in the officers' mess. Now, the Falklands is not only the RAF's most modern, but also its most distant active base in the world. And we were reminded of the state of readiness as we flew in on our TriStar, escorted by Tornado fighters. As you come into land, the cabin crew remind you to put your watches back 4 hours, or as one wag put it once, 4 hours and 20 years. Well, now we're off to meet the man in charge here, but as I look down the runway, and in a very typically gale-force wind we've got at the moment, I can just see the famous landmark of the two mountains known as the Two Sisters. Sort of twin peaks, really. Which seems a pretty good cue for a Dolly Parton record.
Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man.
A typical Ed quip from 1993. But it didn't all go quite to plan, as his producer Phil Hughes remembers.
Someone suggested we get Ed to do an appearance at a hangar one night where they were holding a disco. I think entertainment was probably in short supply. Ed suggested doing the double or drop competition, and he gamely started things off with cabbages and bits and bobs, but he was fighting hard to be heard against the hooting and the shouting. And soon we were both fighting hard against beer cans, cups, food, anything handy they could throw. I think the younger lads present had no idea what crackerjack was. Then one morning we were loaded into a helicopter for a flight to a mountaintop radar station. The wind was howling and we knew our hangovers might be in trouble when an official courier, who did that sort of thing for a living, grabbed a sick bag. But we just about managed to hold on and after landing piled into a track vehicle for a white knuckle climb up the side of the mountain. And when we got to the top, the guys had really gone to town and decked out the canteen with a huge banner saying, "Welcome, Noel." And Ed was highly amused. He loved a good Mickey take.
Mr. Happy-go-lucky, who back home was worryingly on the retreat financially. But during the mid-90s, Ed was going up in the world with numerous outside broadcasts, climbing the Eiffel Tower from toe to tip up the outside metal stairways live, Mount Vesuvius, and most memorably the twin peaks of Snowdon and Ben Nevis for cystic fibrosis. Rebecca Stevens, the first British woman to scale Everest, had been press-ganged along, and although she never broke sweat, there was plenty of sweating and swearing from the rest of the team. It was the first and probably last time a programme would be broadcast live climbing those summits. It will certainly be the last time for Ed's producer, who had to be helicoptered off Ben Nevis after slipping and breaking his leg. Sarah, the production assistant, took up the stopwatch, and when the rest of the team celebrated with a wee dram, the producer succumbed to chloroform in Fort William Hospital. Ed was also about to fall off the showbiz slopes again when in 1999 Radio 2 made way for Steve Wright, and Ed was moved to Sundays. But it gave him a chance on Sundays to play more of his favourite musical standards, and it left more time for charity work. The Lord's Taverners, the Variety Club, Water Rats. He was still big-hearted and quietly did more than his bit. And of course, it left more time for his other passion, golf.
Good afternoon. How are you this Sunday? I know we're into the new year, we're into the millennium, etc., etc. We all know that by now, but also it means that the spring is going to be around the corner, and it's just, you feel so much bouncier, don't you? Even the colours on the trees are different now that New Year's here. But I wax too poetic. Let me tell you about some of the things we're doing this half. We've got a Junior Choice song in a moment. We've had so many letters and emails and everything for old favourites like that. Sammy Davis is in the programme today, Ketty Lester, Marian Lanza.
Never far from 18 holes if he could help it. Golf also gave him one of his favourite lines when someone shouted he was wearing BBC trousers. "What do you mean?" he asked. "Small checks," was the reply.
All bound for morning town, many miles away.
Underneath the showbiz gloss, things were not happy at home. By 2003, as Ed admitted himself, a gulf had grown between him and his bride, Kiara. Things were amicably arranged and the family kept close through some difficult times. Meanwhile, Ed's Sunday afternoon show came to an end in 2006, While Johnny Walker moved in, Ed moved out and took to hosting stage concerts and flitted around various radio stations, gradually stepping back from the footlights. But the Junior Choice brand didn't fade and became a regular Christmas morning treat on Radio 2. And it was the last show he ever presented, as his career almost came full circle. There probably isn't anyone over 30 who hasn't heard of Stewpot, and if you'd like to hear more, we've put some extra recordings on the website. Ed absolutely owned his genres of radio and television. Even though he'd never claim it himself, he was in the premier division of popular broadcasters for 5 decades. Lovely man, and despite a childhood stutter, blessed with a smiling voice. Many of us will miss his chirpy tones and falsetto bye. His own motto had always been, you're only as good as the music you play. For us, it was Ed Stewpot Stewart that was good. In fact, he was one of the very best and will be remembered by listeners, by me and by all his colleagues and friends with respect and love.
He was a very warm person. I always found that. Even when I saw him about 2 or 3 years ago, and it was exactly the same Ed, but he's such a joy and he was such a love.
He was great to be around. There was never any pressure. You never felt that he was lording it because of his status. He was just Ed. He was one of the team who could take a joke, give a joke.
But he was very generous in just about every way. Just an all-round nice dude, you know.
He was a great enthusiast. He was like a kid in a sweet shop. He just wanted to savour them and devour them and enjoy them. And he was always great fun. Whenever we got together, there was always lots of laughter. And as years went by, he just got better and better.
I was so lucky to be doing a job that I absolutely love. And his beaming face all the time. I never, ever saw Ed in a bad mood at all. But a very, very special and lovely guy.
Lovely voice, which was a warm, inviting voice, and I don't think he was ever given credit for that special style he had, which was ability to talk as if he was really talking just to one person, to the listener, which is something that most people in radio strive to do, but he managed to achieve that.
You know, he was a great chap who will be very much missed by his listeners, who will always have happy memories of him.
There were times I loved him and could wrap my arms around him, and other times when I could happily have strangled him. But he had this great knack of being able to disarm people and also disfinance them as well in one or two occasions.
It was so comforting to hear his voice on the radio. He was like a friend. You felt like you knew him really well. And also, I really liked the fact that he talked to kids and adults alike, and you felt very much included in his fun and japes. It's like saying goodbye to part of your youth.
I remember listening to his show on Christmas Day on Radio 2, and it was a brilliant show, and he sounded great, and he sounded so happy to be there and delighted to be playing all these old classics. A lot of people love him, and we'll miss him a lot.
And like all great broadcasters, it didn't matter if you were interested in the subject matter or not. Didn't like the sport, didn't like the music, who cared? You wanted to hear him. He was definitive. He was transfixing. The presenter was the program. You were reminded in his Radio 2 Christmas specials of the decency and generosity of Ed Stewart. We will miss him, and we will miss Stewpot.
And that lovely voice of Judith Durham. And it's me, Stewpot, saying thanks for listening for the last couple of hours. It has been such great fun. And thank you, Bridget and Jill, for helping me out behind the glass. Santa's little helpers. I'll be with you whenever. But have a great Christmas Day, won't you, folks?